But as you are here, I think it'd be good for you to actually hear from God about why we gather together on this particular day. As you know, Christians meet on Sundays, but Friday, of course, is a day when our Muslim friends get together. Why then do we do this? Why is this Good Friday so important? What does it mean for us that we call it Good Friday? Especially since we all know, I hope, that as a matter of history, as a matter of fact, as a matter of Roman records, what took place 2,000 years ago is that on this so-called Good Friday, three men died. So you see, Good Friday, in fact, can be quite misleading, even for Christians. So if you're not a Christian here tonight, and we'll welcome you again, it can be quite misleading since it comes to the word Good Friday. But when have you ever heard it called Bad Friday? Nobody ever invites you to, like, you want to come to Bad Friday? It's always Good Friday. On this particular day, which we are now celebrating, though, people died. And just so that we have a clear mind on this, I need to press this point upon us. We certainly can't say, for instance, that it was a Good Friday, especially for the key person whom we are celebrating, Jesus Christ, King Jesus. He doesn't look like he's having a good time, because he's not. Some of us here would not even call a day where we lose our phone a good day. If you said to them in the morning after they lost the phone on the MRT, good morning, they said, what's so good about it? I lost my phone. Or I lost my girlfriend this morning. She broke up with me on the train. Some of us would not call any of these things, making our life horrible, a good thing. We would not call it a good day, let alone a day where there is, in fact, a loss of life. Yet, like death itself, the meaning and importance of Good Friday for all of us is often ignored. No one ever switches to thinking, why do you call it good? I don't know. Have you ever been asked, why is Good Friday good? Some might even be thinking that Christians welcome the death of Jesus in a completely unqualified manner. Especially since, in the past, as a church, we have, in our attempt to help maybe children appreciate the goodness of the days that we celebrate, we've done things like that. Maybe we take them out for a special meal on Good Friday. We certainly don't serve like lentils or bean and soup on this particular day. Maybe we celebrate it by even, you know, creating a game for the kids. And the kids think, Good Friday is really good. What's good about it? I get to eat. Spend time with daddy. But the truth is, it's not true. Except for Christians who don't truly appreciate the wonder of what took place. And this will take some thought tonight. But other than Christians, and I admit there are many of them, who don't actually appreciate what happened. In a way, the mystery of it and the wonder of it. The truth is, Good Friday should be profoundly disturbing. And I'm not going to say that tonight's maturity rate at a certain age or whatever, but I'm going to say to you that Christianity is not this fluffy Easter egg bunny religion, happy occasion that many of us think it is. If you are here tonight, it's because your friends really want you to think hard about this in a way that will impact your life, in a way that makes all of the arrangements we made tonight worth it. Because this is to save you. Because Good Friday is, in fact, profoundly disturbing. I think we should probably take that off now. I can't beat them. 2,000 years ago, after it took place, immediately the world began to change. And 2,000 years after now, we can see that the message that was preached from this, which confirmed God's plans and promises for His people, which in fact built the foundation of the church, which in fact caused the deaths of even more Christians, 2,000 years ago till today, we see the significance of this in shaping your life and mine. For starters, let's be clear, as I said, the reality is we are celebrating a death. At one level, nothing, in fact, can change the reality that death is always a negative. I know that we have many religions that, to some extent, make us feel more positive about it. But we have to start from the baseline of death is horrible. If you can't say that now, I think that indicates that there's some measure of not being able to accept it. Because part of acceptance comes from understanding that death, in fact, is terrible. We are not chickens, and yet we die. And even for chickens, death is not enjoyable. There have been cultures, of course, that glorified death, mostly warrior cultures. And maybe a cynical you might think, why are they celebrating death? It must be because it's good to tell warriors who have to die anyway that it's a good thing to die. Vikings, for instance. Or one that I fell in love with as a boy, the samurai culture. The welcoming of death, so common to these warrior cultures, tells us that for a long time now in our life together as human beings on this planet, we've actually struggled to both learn to accept it and cope with it and understand it. In fact, I see now, even without the need for war, many of us who are younger have transformed death into something that is cool. Something where we celebrate the notion of dying. Now, sitting here together though, after experiencing the beauty of music, after experiencing a Friday where, although there was a jam, we have a full weekend ahead of us. I hope you have a good weekend. Maybe you'll join us this Sunday. And after experiencing a full meal, I think if God was to say to each one of us now, hey, I tell you what, since you think death is cool, in the next 10 seconds, just say yes, and I will take your life from you. I think if that option was given to us, in this context, hardly anyone would say yes. Because we know, even with life being really sad at times, and I think many of us here, maybe not all, have experienced a sadness that leads us to want to commit suicide. Even with that, death is not the way to deal with life inevitably. It's not the way we solve the problem of death in life. Answering death with death is not a good answer. That's the reason why there are suicide lines to help people who are thinking of ending life, but they don't help people to end life. If there was such a suicide line, Emily, I think, would report it. In our culture today, there is therefore something of a complicated acceptance of death, yet at the same time, a complicated struggling against death, where at least for some, death seems to have lost its sting. But in fact, as much as we have seemingly accepted death, the truth is we cannot sensibly accept death. In the same way that we cannot sensibly support a suicide line that assisted you in killing yourself. Any one of us, we come home, we find a child committed suicide because they were assisted by some helpline, I tell you, we call up our lawyers. When a plane full of people, whatever state of life they may be, some sad, some happy, some not caring, when it goes down, nobody in their right mind celebrates. When we see a bloody body on the highway, as I did just 2 weeks ago, and I think a significant portion of us here have experienced that, we drive past it. First, we were irritated for the first 20 minutes. Why are all the cars slowing down? What's this stupid road works against? JKR, ayo. Then suddenly you see a crowd, and there's always a lot of motorists. You notice how motorcyclists are always there to help? And then your car has to be the one car that files past, almost like a funeral procession. And then you see the body, and you see the massive amount of blood. It never ceases to shock me how much blood a human body has. And you see the helmet usually lying nearby, and you see the damage. You've all had the experience I had 2 weeks ago on a federal highway, and there's that one moment where you get a sudden chill. although you are healthy in your car with your loved ones, your children, you realize you can die. And it feels wrong to drive away. And I can tell you, I think that's why a lot of people stop, because they're trying to cope with it themselves. That uneasiness has to do with the reality that someone just died. The word does not mean the same thing as someone got hurt. Injury and death may be connected, but they are still worlds apart. If someone here tonight handling the pieces of paper got cut on their hand and started bleeding profusely, we would get worried because they're now injured. But it becomes all of a sudden different when that person collapses and then dies. A whole tremor will be felt across a crowd if one of us says, he's dead. It's as if someone's lights just got turned off. And nobody here, no matter what your philosophy of coping is, no matter what you say over a couple of beers, no matter what you say when you are sad or depressed or happy or you're doing well or not well in life, no matter what you say, we have to recognize the simple baseline of being human, which is, it is never a good thing to die. At least as recent as 500 years ago, people understood this, and that is why the cross of Jesus meant a lot to them. Today, with our prolonged life, Medicare, drugs, exercise, diet, we live in something of an illusion in our minds. But you can't change the way the sentence always sounds wrong. I am happy he is dead. It never sounds right. Not even if your wife and yourself or you and your husband hate that relative. You can't say it out loud, especially grandma around. You can't say, I'm happy he's dead. No one can say that and be human at the same time. No one in their right mind sensibly celebrates death. But here we are, celebrating the death of one man. And the question, therefore, is if we can't embrace this death, and we can't stop it, and we can't avoid it, then what do we do? Well, the truth is, many of you have been just letting it slide into place. You just keep going, and then boom, it happens, and you don't worry about it anymore, because you're dead anyway. Some of us, whilst doing this, we are only half accepting it. But at the same time, we are in an eternal struggle. We are actively struggling to keep it at bay. In part, of course, we are simply enjoying life as God has made it, to its fullest. In part, we are actually trying to avoid death. That is a real fear that is motivating us as we eat healthy, think healthy, avoid negative thoughts, as we exercise, as we diet, as we move houses to where we think we'll be healthier and live longer. In fact, I couldn't believe that the BBC actually ran or produced this documentary recently. I had to look twice at the title because from the first opening 30 seconds already, I had to keep watching and take it seriously because the lady was saying, I believe that we have a serious problem as human beings and I don't want to have that, and that is that I grow old. Really? She and many others, including doctors, believe that they have a right to never really grow old. Now, you may not be like that, but I suggest to you that, in fact, we're all like that in some way. All our attempts to have a better quality of life don't actually deal with the problem, though, do they? The proof is ultimately in what happens to all of us when we die. I think we do many things to enjoy life, but ultimately it is also related to not wanting to suffer death. Death is always a permanent reminder there of the bigger problem, the real problem. In fact, there is a bigger problem behind death that God knows about, that Jesus knows about, that the Bible preaches to us. And until we recognize it, we can never be really fully rid of this fear of death. The Bible is acutely aware of your fear, and it describes us this way, therefore, in terms of what we are as human beings. It says that we are those who all our lives are held in slavery by our fear of death. When we live our whole lives not wanting to die, then we are slaves of this fear. Whether it is through obsessive efforts to be healthy or to have the perfect life or to avoid all forms of pain, including emotional suffering, we are all, in the end, as a collective, expressing some part of a difficulty in dealing with the fact that life seems to have a bigger problem. It doesn't end right. And in part, this instinct is right. In fact, we are feeling something that God Himself feels in almost the same way. Because we know how good life actually should be and can be. And God Himself does not see death positively. I'm sure you'll be glad to know that. He did not create life on earth to end in death. Even though you may seem to have accepted it in part and are struggling against it in part. But He says in one of His prophets called Ezekiel, listen carefully to God speaking to you. Do I take pleasure in the death of the wicked? Do you see what I'm saying there? In a way, you can already see that if the wicked deserve death, God, who is good and righteous and pure and holy, should in fact be at peace with it. But He says, do I take pleasure in it? Like some Marvel comic hero, the Punisher, who kills people and says he deserved it. God the righteous does not take pleasure in the death of the wicked, declares the sovereign Lord. Rather, am I not pleased when they turn and live? God takes pleasure not only in people changing, repenting, stopping their wicked ways, turning to Him, but also in them living as a result. You see, death is not a good thing. And if you accept that death is inevitable, as I did as a young man, I told you I was into Bushido. It's a bit strange for a Chinese Malacca boy to be into Bushido. But one of the Japanese sayings I learned was Chigaraganai. It's partly a Zen way of thinking, where I learned to just accept that, in fact, death was a good thing. That I should prepare to write a haiku, a three-line Japanese poem, as I face death in glorious form. But I can tell you, even my a-religious, atheistic parents, if they had found me with the knife to my throat or gassed to death, like I was tempted multiple times as a young teen, depressed as I was, they would have been shocked and they would have cried over my haiku, no matter how well written. Death is not a good thing. In fact, death is an indicator, as I said, of the bigger problem. Far worse than just being the end of life. I would have suffered terribly with death because death is actually the result of living against God. Death is not a door to a better place. Death is the trapdoor that leads you directly in a chute to judgment. Because we have lived life a particular way. That is why we are sliding towards this death and we think we can scramble upwards against a metallic slide. But we are the wicked on view that the prophet Ezekiel spoke of there. We are suffering the death, not a biological end, but the death of the wicked. And who here can say, please raise your hand if you can claim this so that we can help you. Who here can say that they have been completely innocent in life? I might be confident about you, just to compliment you. But my children go to a number of different schools in our region, our area. And these are bright young kids. And to a man, I can tell you, they all have wicked thoughts. Not every month, not every week, but every day. Such that I would not want to be in a room naked and alone with them if they had a gun and I had $500 on me. As one pastor used to say, the only reason why we do not do more wicked things is because of lack of opportunity. Who here can say that they haven't thought of the wicked thing to do when no one was looking and the stakes made it worthy and the reward was enormous and enticing enough? Do you honestly think that you die as an innocent person and not the death of the wicked? Death is not simply the ending in life of life in a natural biological process. It is a biological process for sure. But as far as God is concerned, God the righteous, God the good, we are getting what we deserve from the life we have lived. And the prophets and teachers of the Bible who represent God and speak His word to us are remarkably consistent. 1,000+ years later, the Apostle Paul says, the wages of sin is death. Same concept. Our sin is why we die. We are getting what we deserve. If you have put up your hand there, maybe I should give you some time to put up your hand. If you have put up your hand there claiming, Pastor, I'm innocent. If I die, it will be unrighteous. Well, if you have put up your hand, I will wait till your funeral without any vendetta to say these words from the Bible. You die because God is paying you what you deserve. We are all wicked. You must understand, therefore, tonight, my dear friends, that God, who has the power of life and death over us, who does not enjoy our deaths, yet must and does judge us for our sin such that we all die. We die because, sadly, God judges us to have deserved it. If you keep thinking of yourself as not worthy of dying, if you keep thinking of yourself as innocent, then you are saying God has got you wrong. God has got you wrong. And you're also saying, therefore, that God got the reason for Jesus' death wrong. Because when God's perfect Son, Jesus, dies in the horrific way He does on the cross on Good Friday, according to the plan of a God who does not enjoy our deaths at all, what is happening there is something incredibly shocking and amazing. Because what is happening there from a God who does not take death as something pleasurable is that He is dying for us who deserve to die. The reason why Jesus is suffering is us. Jesus is certainly not the reason for His own death. In fact, the Bible tells us that God's Son became man so that by the grace of God, He might taste death for everyone. Everyone. Jesus died for you. For everyone. He, the one who did not deserve death, was born to die for us who deserve to die. God did this to rescue us. He didn't obviously do this for fun or because it might be a good idea. He did this to help us, to rescue us, because we were held in bondage in a sinfulness which leads us to both fear death and to keep doing everything we can to avoid it, whilst at the same time not acknowledging the problem beneath the problem. The problem of sin beneath death. The problem of living life wickedly against God, which leads us to deserve death. And this is the power of the devil. Yes, the devil is real. As Jesus also is real. You can hardly deny the devil if you acknowledge that Jesus, in fact, is the historical figure that the Romans had to kill 2,000 years ago. And Jesus in his life, and we have at least four books recording what he did, and we have multiple sermons and preaching, and 500 witnesses at least who recognize his resurrection and him coming out from his tomb. We recognize these things to be true because they're part of history. And in Jesus' history, we see that he fought the devil. We see that he's not just a man, a good teacher, like some religions say he is, who walked around teaching people how to be moral, who walked around teaching people how to be better in their life as they headed towards death. No, Jesus came to rescue us. That rescue mission was clear from the day that he exorcised the first demon from the person who was being demon-possessed. That rescue mission was clear from the day he began preaching about our need to be free from the devil and from sin. Jesus is God's rescuer for man, as the Bible and the church has witnessed for 2,000 years. In the Bible passage that we have tonight, it says, since we, the children, have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity. Jesus is God the Son. As spirit, he was not man, but he became man so that by being man who shares in our death and takes our place, he can destroy the one that we are under bondage to, the devil. So that in sharing this death, in fighting for us, in rescuing us, he can free those, all of us, who are in our lives held in this bondage. As is clearly the symptom we see in the fear of death. We know from the Bible that Jesus' whole life was a matter of conflict on our behalf against the devil. We know from his works that he was fighting for us. And so therefore, when he went to the cross, he was not simply some moral teacher who ran afoul of some political leaders and then just died as an accident. He was fighting the devil on our behalf. He was on a mission as God's king to rescue his people. Here then is the warning for you tonight. And you know what to do with warnings, right? You ignore it, you suffer what you're being warned against. Here then is the exposure of you tonight. And you know what to do with that, right? I'm sure your life coach, your mentor, your teachers, your best friends all tell you. The reason why we're telling you these flaws in yourself is so that you may learn and change. Here then is the great warning and exposure for you. Perhaps it's not what you expected, but you stayed, even the hangman's noose in front of you. Congratulations. Here is the warning and exposure of you from the cross. Death has been dealt with. It's death that's being dealt with. God is not giving you a better life from the cross, per se. That's not the ultimate point and cause. In fact, the big issue is the problem of death because of our sin and our wickedness. Your death is the reason why Jesus, God's perfect Son, dies for you. And tonight, if you do nothing, if you remain neutral about this message, then you are, in fact, rejecting a very serious warning from God with regards to this salvation. You are, in fact, treating as nothing what it took a death to accomplish. God's Son died to give you this warning and to make you see the reality of your life. And you are saying, whatever. The Christian annual celebration of Good Friday, in fact, has to be one of the strangest, if not the strangest, celebrations in the world. We don't feel it anymore because Christianity, in a way, has won. But 2,000 years ago, we would meet in underground caves because that's how much we were hated. But today, we can actually book in, you know, largely a Muslim country, a community hall. In a way, I thank God that there were certain restrictions placed on us. We were told, can't have crosses. Well, that's a good thing, because crosses don't tell us what the Bible tells us so clearly. Jesus dealt with death on the cross. I bet no one here thinks, hey, what a cool piece of decor. Maybe I'll take it home tonight and put it in the middle of my living room. The annual celebration of Good Friday is only clear to us if we see death, the death of God's Son, right at the center of its meaning and significance. If we see how God truly feels about our death and about His Son's death. If we see how God really thinks about us and our sin and our wickedness. Because Jesus is on the cross in direct correlation to our problem. That is not ultimately a statement of Jesus. That is ultimately a statement of you. If you were good and holy and live your lives for God, there will be no hangman's noose. But we celebrate it because He did not die because of Himself. In fact, Jesus could resurrect people. Instead, He died for everyone. Jesus' death was God's kindness to us. That's His death, only because now you have a chance to not die and face judgment the same way as He did for you. By the grace of God, He tasted death for you. Our death put Him there. And whatever causes us to face death is the reason why Jesus resolutely faced down death. And yet, in a way, sadly, dangerously, that shows how blind you are right now. We celebrate the cross and Good Friday year after year after year without this appreciation, without this awareness, without taking this warning seriously, without exposing ourselves and our wickedness. We continue our blind and wicked ways. We are blind to what even the Romans were shocked by. If I was running this, if I had just said what I said, if we had done this kind of decor in the Roman world, not with these nooses, but with crosses, the Roman police would shut us down in 2 seconds. A polite Roman would walk past, be horrified. By the way, Romans are very violent people. They had to be to conquer the Mediterranean. But they will be horrified at the cross. And we are not horrified by it. In Rome, the cross and crucifixion is such an abhorrent statement, fact, such an embarrassment, that although the Romans regularly use it against conquered people, they never allowed it to ever happen to a single Roman citizen. Go read out the cross and crucifixion on Wikipedia tonight. In fact, the cross is so disgusting that to say, any Romans here? Just want to check. Any first century Romans here? To say crux is to say F-U-C-K. In fact, it's worse than that. Polite Roman children would get slapped if they said crux. Go do your homework. Crux. And yet, we are not disgusted by it. The word, which was a swear word, is now an epitome of our blindness. The fact that we are blind to death, blind to the horror of our lives, that puts Jesus on the cross, is a clear sign of the power of sin over us. Much of what I'm saying tonight, unless you are ready to confront the truth of your wicked souls, unless you are ready to see that this death has to shake you to the very foundations of what your life actually means, You'll end up like Taeyang, just wearing costume jewelry for the rest of your life. Please don't quote me. I don't know whether Taeyang's actually Christian. He's a Presbyterian, by the way. So don't quote me. I'm just saying, it's symptomatic of our problem. When was the last time you saw someone in an equivalent fashion wearing an electric chair on their ears? Nobody does that. We do it with the cross because we are blind to what God did on the cross. In fact, we do it the cross because we are blind to sin, and that is the real issue you must struggle to escape from tonight. You must embrace the truth that the cross is saying about you. John, a key witness for what happened here on the cross, says, "He who does what is sinful is of the devil." He's not very polite, is he? Because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. You see, Christianity is not just some choice, some religious moral choice. Christianity is God acting in history to stop human beings from dying the way they are dying. Christianity is no different from science, medicine, geography, physics. Christianity is God saying, the reason why you have been living the life you have and struggling the way you have to preserve life whilst failing is because, in fact, you are under the power of sin. As surely as gravity holds you down, sin is even worse. The reason the Son of God appeared is precisely because of this reality. Why did Jesus, who could control the stars, stop storms from happening, release demon-possessed people, raise the dead? Why did he get born to die? The answer is to destroy the power of the devil over you. And right now, I can confidently say from the Bible, from God's word, all of you who are not yet possessed by this Jesus, all of you who do not yet see your sin and your wickedness and your need for salvation and this Savior, you are a victim of the devil and you enjoy it. You enjoy it so much, you can turn the cross, God's message of both help and your need to you, into a jewel accessory. Do it if you must. Maybe you have a very nice diamond brooch at home, which is a cross that your mother gave you. Keep it. But you must never fail to understand the significance of what God was saying to humanity 2,000 years ago in Jesus. Let me summarize this for you again, one last time. This Good Friday, think about the cross of that original Good Friday. It is a wake-up call to you about your death. You may not like what I say as a pastor. Can't help it, it's my job, it's true. But you are dying. You may not like what I say about sin, but I bet you your best friends could point out one or two things about you. But most importantly, you must realize that this wake-up call is a measure of God's priority. It's a measure of the importance of this, that across the land, around the world today, churches are all preaching the same thing, perhaps to unsuspecting visitors who thought they would come, eat some cupcakes and go home, but suddenly they're being assaulted with the message of death. Well, that is because God wants you to be assaulted with this truth. Are you still going to take selfies with that coffin out there? Maybe. But please, please, don't fail to see what it's saying about you. You lying down in that coffin and taking a picture, that may well be prophetic. In fact, it is. Because the cross is meant to offend you, as it did the Roman world until it became their religion. If the cross has lost its offensiveness, then it has lost its power to save you. Because the cross is saying, you're wicked. So please tonight, realize you are hopeless. That's why the most powerful man in the universe hung on his cross for you. If you think you can help yourself when the most powerful man in the universe is hanging to his death, abandoned by God for you, then I think you have a bigger problem, which is called logic. If there was any other way to save you, it would have been done. And therefore, the cross is a permanent reminder of the curse we are all under. I hope to see you at church, maybe the following week or next month. But you know what? I'll be saying the same thing to you next year and the year after until Jesus returns. Because this is the point of Christianity. You need Jesus' death for you. An innocent man died so that you would live. Friends, I know this was not what you expected. But let's be honest with ourselves tonight. What is there to lose? No one's going to judge you negatively for being honest about your wickedness. We're all wicked. I can get the whole church to put up their hands now if you want. Who here is wicked? Please don't use it against them in the office next week. Huh? Boss, he said he's wicked. Please give me the job instead. But let's be honest. Have you been afraid of dying? You really should be more afraid of the devil. You're not really living, you know. You should be more afraid, in fact, of God, because that cross is the last warning for you. You should be more afraid of the things that you have done in your life which put Jesus in that place. And if he comes to rescue you and you give him a cold shoulder, a neutral response, I can tell you right now, he's going to be mighty pissed the next time he comes back. You want to hear more evidence of that? Come and read Hebrews, the book, with us next week onwards. But I'm telling you, you don't need to be afraid. Jesus is here to help. One of the sweetest verses in the Bible is this last verse from our passage. He himself suffered when he was tempted. Therefore, he is able to help those who are being tempted. He can help you. So let's answer his call tonight. I'm going to pray so that you can collect your thoughts a little bit and say what many of us have said in the last 10, 20 years to God. I'm sorry. I screwed up. I'm wicked. I don't deserve you. Please forgive me. It's as simple as that. You can say that tonight, or you can say that later. But why not say it now? God has just spoken to you. It's only right that you don't give him the cold shoulder. Let me pray, and please join me if it's the prayer that you should be praying now. Dear God, thank you. Thank you for sending Jesus to die for me. Thank you for what he did for me. I don't deserve it. I have been such a wicked fool. I have known about Jesus for a long time. I have known that he lived and died, and yet I did not care to investigate. Or I investigated, but I did not take him seriously. All this time, I have been avoiding the sin in my life, which leads to your displeasure and my death. Please forgive me. I want to change from now on. I want to say I'm sorry for all the things I've done, and that means I don't want to do them again. Please give me the power to live differently. Free me from this bondage to a life of death, of sin, of following the devil. I enjoy it, but I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't because Jesus died, and he is a great man who died for me to live a holy and good life. Help me to understand more about what it means to live this good life for you. Help me to clear any misunderstandings I have. But most importantly, we thank you so much for sending your son to rescue me, for giving me life when I had none, for saving me. Change me, Lord. And please accept me as your follower. Please accept me as your child. Thank you so much.
for what you did for me. I can never thank you enough. In your son's name I pray. Amen.